Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning. Was that too loud? Was that okay? Yeah, I blew my... Maybe it's because I hadn't been on the air in a week. I spoke into this microphone, and I have earphones on, and it blew my ears.
Well, my left ear is bleeding. I don't know if it's because of you. But.
Wow, I just felt like I was too loud. All right, so turn your radio down, I guess, what I'm telling you folks, if I'm too loud. Welcome to our program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman, back from family vacation. Good to be in the saddle again. Ed Vitagliano alongside. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Who filled in for me last week? I don't even know.
I did.
By yourself?
I filled in. Not too loudly, I might say. I think I just...
You're a soft-spoken Italian last
soft-spoken.
Week?
Yeah.
Every
day the show would start, and it would say, here's your host, Tim Wildman.
Right.
I would say, no, I'm wrong not. Again.
We need to make a new opening where when I'm out.
It doesn't really matter. If our listeners don't mind me saying that every time,
okay.
We can do that.
So who filled in? You and who? You and Ray?
And Ray and also Abe helped out. And
okay. So a team effort.
Yes, it was a team effort. We got the job done.
Okay. Got the job done.
Without doing too much damage.
All right, tell us what we got coming up today on this here program.
Well, in a few minutes, we got Elizabeth Brown, who's a professional counselor and speaker, talking about what to do when life falls apart all around you. Bottom of the hour, Richard.
All around you.
All around you, yeah.
Wow, that's...
Listen, at bottom of the hour, Richard Simmons III. I'm gonna tell him. I had all his old exercise videos and... I think this is the same guy, Richard Simmons III.
I don't think so.
Founder and executive director for the Center for Executive Leadership. You think that's the same guy?
No, and when he gets
don't
on,
say it.
Don't
okay.
Don't make Richard Simmons jokes because he's heard them his whole life.
Probably has.
And he's written something very serious he wants to communicate. And
yes.
The first thing out of the box is one of the co-hosts on this show making fun of his name.
Yeah.
You can see how that would.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, Richard, man, where'd
right.
you get those short shorts?
Right.
That you always,
that's okay. Don't do that.
All right. All
okay.
right. So it's a good thing you're on the
Richard,
show this week because
last week you would have done that?
I would have done the.
Okay, Richard Simmons III.
Yes, the validity of the Bible in an age of skepticism.
Okay. See there, that is a great topic.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And then next hour, social critic, I always mispronounce his name. No matter what I pick, it's going to be wrong. Oz Guinness, did I say
it right? That's his name.
All right, because I always pronounce it Guinness.
No, it's Guinness.
Like the beer or something.
We can ask him, but that's Guinness.
Guinness.
It's Guinness, isn't it?
And
no,
we'll be
Guinness.
Talking about Christian courage and the struggle for the soul of Western civilization. So
Oz is he's an American, but he's from Britain originally.
Yes, went to school at Oxford. In fact, he's senior fellow at the Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics.
I want to ask him about what he thinks about, is it Brexit?
Brexit?
Brexit. That sounds like a food you get somewhere.
Brexit.
You know, Brexit.
Or shampoo or something. You
yeah,
know?
Or
remember
something.
Breck? Breck shampoo.
But it's the exit of Britain from the European Union.
Yes. That'd be a great question. I'd like to know what he thinks
about that. So much going on in the news. We want to talk. We'll spend a few minutes here talking about it. Of course, last week was the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. And went off without incident in terms of the security there. And evidently the people in Cleveland, the police department, everyone did a wonderful job because...
I was actually concerned about the potential for violent protests in the street. But, of course, now my understanding is they brought in help from all across the country.
Right.
You know, police departments lent them and
right.
they trained them all. And apparently there were some protests, which
right.
is good. I mean, that's... Part of what it means
way,
to be
so to
in America, but they kept, but they had everything under control. Now, the DNC, Democratic mm-hmm. National Convention, it is in Philadelphia, and they're in the middle of a heat wave up there. So we'll see what that looks like in terms of protests.
But what I was going to mention politically from the Republican National Convention was that it appears that Donald Trump got a 4, 5, 6 point percentage bump in the national polls, which is traditional for the candidates.
Right.
And so he has pulled ahead even in some states or some polls of Hillary Clinton, the Democrat nominee, not officially yet, but she will be by the end of the week, I guess. So it appears the Republican National Convention was a huge success for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and they avoided any kind of real split at the convention. There was a lot of the regular media was predicting, you know, a real kind of a, politically speaking, a bloodbath in terms of the Cruz delegates and the Trump delegates and the Never Trump people. But it was, you know, tightly controlled and really went off without much of a hitch. There were, you know, a couple of moments there where people wanted some rules changes, but that was squelched. And, you know, it's done. And like you said, I think it turned out being very successful for Donald Trump. His family and, you know, his wife, there was a little hiccup there with the speech writer that appeared to plagiarize from Michelle Obama's speech, which she apparently took stuff from another writer. But anyway, the Trump children seemed to shine in their moments in the spotlight. Some good speeches from Mike Pence and Newt Gingrich and some others. And so it would be considered a success. Now the Democrats are under the spotlight.
Yeah, and they got a mess.
They have a mess with these emails that have been released.
There's this group, I don't know how else to describe them, called WikiLeaks, folks. They are not a polka band, all right? Well, they may be, for all I know. But it's called WikiLeaks. Am I right?
Yes, WikiLeaks.
And what they, huh?
WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks.
Like Wikipedia. And
okay. So they what they do is somebody has hacked. They say Russia did this.
Well, that's what some of the media is saying, that Russia, and I think that's the general belief, is that someone in Russia hacked the Democratic National Committee's email base.
Okay. So they hack. You're going to have to follow me now here. Okay. Stay with me. Because it sounds like a.
Sounds like a Jason Bourne thriller or something,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes. So you have the Democrat National Committee. They have their offices and their operation here. And they were hacked. Russia or whoever pulled a Richard Nixon.
Right.
Okay, except they virtually broke in. They didn't actually physically go and break into the Watergate office.
But it's a good way of thinking about it. It's as if they broke into their offices.
I don't know. Richard Nixon didn't do it.
He didn't actually.
Yeah, so my apologies.
He covered it up. Yeah.
Well, anyway, the Republicans broke into the Democrat National Committee
headquarters
at the Watergate
Hotel.
Hotel in Washington, D.C. Thus, we all remember
the Watergate scandal.
Watergate scandal. So, my apologies to Richard Nixon for. He didn't authorize
the break-in,
theft of the papers,
right?
Whatever they discovered there, they were probably. But now Russia hacked into the Democrat National Committee emails, gave them to WikiLeaks, right?
Which is a site where you can just dump stuff.
So they have. So then this WikiLeaks has been dumping emails out to the public by the thousands of internal communications of staff at the Democrat National Committee. Well, what has happened is, this is all summed up in my word mess earlier.
Which is as good a word as there is to describe this.
What has happened is that it proves that the Democrat National Committee was favoring Hillary Clinton and trying to smear, in some cases, Bernie Sanders. Of course, Bernie Sanders was Hillary Clinton's rival. He lost to her because of the superdelegates and a lot of other reasons. A lot of people use the expression the Democrat committee's process of choosing a candidate is, quote, rigged.
Right.
Well, this only proves Bernie Sanders and their teams, who represent a substantial number of people in Philadelphia at the convention this week.
He won many primaries.
Yeah, I mean, probably 40% of them are going to be you know, they're Sanders sympathizers at least.
Right.
So it has created a big family feud on the eve of their, well, they start tonight,
they start,
right?
Yeah, today. Well, you know, the director, I guess her name, the head of the Democratic National Committee, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, forced to resign over this. She was part of the kind of the spearhead of the let's get Hillary in coronation kind of thing.
And Sanders kept saying, you're favoring.
Right.
His people kept saying, you're favoring Hillary this because you're supposed to be neutral.
Right.
When you're party officials between candidates. And he was saying, no, they're favoring Hillary. They want her. So it
turns out they were favoring Hillary.
Right.
My understanding is this morning at a meeting at the convention or at some sort of gathering pre-convention, some of these delegates shouted down Debbie Wasserman Schultz, crying out, shame, shame, shame. So this is a disaster. We also heard this morning in our leadership staff meeting that these WikiLeaks emails from the Democratic National Committee are going to be released. They haven't all been released.
Like a water drop.
Yes.
Water drop.
Chinese water torture, they used to call it. And my understanding is one of the high-ranking officials sent a video to be vetted by the video vetting committee and asking them to take a look at this video. We may want to use this in our taco bowl engagement. Basically, ethnic racist reference
to Hispanics
towards Hispanics,
right?
Taco bowl engagement. So it's their way.
So this is an internal memo by the Democrat National Committee using ethnic slurs,
right?
But most people would consider ethnic slurs against Hispanics.
Yes.
All the while claiming Trump is against Hispanics,
right?
So Trump's going to come back now. You know he's going to use it.
Oh, yes. And there are apparently more, even more damaging emails that will be released this week from
WikiLeaks.
Now,
how do you ethnic slur white people on the food thing? I know this is a different question for another day that we need to explore. But, you know, they make the blacks, they say watermelon and what?
Don't drag me into this.
Fried chicken. With Hispanics, you're saying you taco bowl.
Well, the whole idea is when you have minority communities,
right?
There are cultural things.
If you say you pizza eating machine, is that an Italian ethnic slur against an Italian?
And I hear that all the time around
here.
Does
that bother you?
Oh, no, it really doesn't. But Italians, you know, don't have the same history of discrimination as blacks.
Well, they do. They have a lot of when they came here. But
they did. But
I just
garlic
wonder
eaters,
what we as whites are supposed to be offended.
Garlic
by.
Eaters.
That's my question.
Was a big thing against Italians. You know,
okay.
I guess pizza eaters, with pasta eaters, or whatever. But because food is sometimes cultural, so tacos would be if you call.
I love
all,
tacos.
I do. Yeah. I also do.
Okay, so you don't know what white people are supposed to be offended by on the food thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
Can you get back with me on that?
Do I what?
Can you get back with me on that? All right, let's move on.
Who am I supposed to ask?
Let's move on. I don't know. See, I mean, I just don't know what I'm supposed to be looking out for there on the food thing. People say, you so-and-so eating thing.
Right.
And, you know, people, I don't know. Yeah, that's offensive to me. I don't know what. Hot dog? I don't know. Anyway.
Hot dog.
All right, we'll revisit that another year.
Chocolate chip ice cream eating.
You're listening to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. On a more helpful note, let's move on to our first guest.
Yeah, we want to welcome Elizabeth Brown, who's a professional counselor and speaker. She's author of the book, Standing Up When Life Falls Down Around You. Elizabeth, welcome to today's
issues.
Kind
of appropriate for Hillary Clinton right now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's in the world of politics, sometimes the world falls down all around you. Elizabeth, welcome, and thank you for being our guest. Tell us, I get the impression that this is a book that a lot of Christians would gravitate towards because here's the part I get the impression, that there seems to be a lot of people who are not only struggling with loss, but Christians who are just in the midst of terrible battles, you know, in terms of family members and job situations and what have you. As you travel and speak, is it worse today, maybe because of cultural decay, or is it always been this tough for Christians?
No, know, I think it's always been tough, and I'm happy to be here with you today to talk about this, because challenges and catastrophes, ups and downs of life, it's part of life. And trying to struggle through those very difficult, devastating times can take us out and steal our joy, even when we are strong in our faith. And over time, it really becomes a matter of knowing what anchors to grab and hold on to, the lifelines that we need.
Well, and you don't, this isn't just abstract theory to you. You've gone through personal devastation and loss. Do you mind sharing some of that with our listening audience?
I'd be happy to. Of course, just like all of you who are listening, my husband and I had plenty of ups and downs as we traveled our life together with going to graduate school, times and periods when there wasn't time for loving because of all the responsibilities in life and children issues. But when our two-year-old became chronically ill, we began to really struggle with difficult issues. We climbed the ladder back up and felt we were on our way, and suddenly she got a virus and died. And we really were thrown into a whirlpool of loss. No different from the loss you're thrown into when your marriage breaks up or your child goes awry and you're scared to death for their going down the wrong path. No different from any very difficult time in our life. And it's just a time when you battle to get back up, even with strong faith, even with strong family, and many of us don't have either of those. Over time, I guess we've talked with thousands of people who are in grief through seminars and discussion and in response to the books I've written. But when our second daughter, who had four young children, developed leukemia, I knew she wouldn't die. I knew she wouldn't. She'd battle through and she'd make it, but she didn't. And we knew immediately we had to get up, because if we didn't, we would face other health issues, we would face our family struggling again. So there's just simply things you can do that pull you through grief, and not that you forget the past, but you learn from it, and you deal with it, and you trust God within the midst of it.
If you, and again, we're talking with Elizabeth Brown and the name of the book, we're discussing with her, which I'm sure flowed out of her own life's tragedies. The name of the book is Standing Up When Life Falls Down Around You. When you move past the rawness of the pain of loss, like you have, do you ever feel like, or do people ever accuse you of being disloyal to the memory of that person who died? Because it seems like some people,
that's a choice to figure out how to not feel disloyal. I mean, you can log into the memories, because all of us want to hold on to the memories. We don't want to lose whatever it was. We don't want to forget what we had. On the other hand, with critical choices, we can choose to be wise, or we can make those emotions our guideline. If you live in your emotions, you will not get through. You will be stuck for a lifetime. It's not time or even faith, though both of those are critical. But the crux of getting back up is making personal decisions to find the good in the present and to find the good that has flown, or the lessons that have come from the bad experience that we have had in the past.
Well, you mentioned your husband, both of you, of course, going through the terrible losses you've experienced. Do you think men, you know, you're a professional counselor, do you think men process grief differently? Do they respond to trials differently than women, or are they essentially the same?
There is a big difference between, and it's the general thing, of course. Some men are more like women in their response, vice versa. But basically, men and women express their grief very differently. A woman, after she has lost something important to her, whatever it might be, a dream, a child, a marriage, whatever the crisis is, we'll talk about it to everyone, even the grocery store checkout person. Right. But a man will simply buck up and hold it in and say, well, I'm doing fine. And then most of the times the questions to him are questions like, well, how's your wife or your girlfriend doing? And even if they are asked directly, well, how are you doing? It's just a short, quick response, not really getting down to what it is. For men, within the first 2 years, there are 3 times more accidents, 4 times more suicides, 6 times more strokes, 10 times more heart attacks. So it's important to stand up and to get back up and to get your mind in focus. For women, they make it through those first 2 years fairly well, but they begin to have those same damaging statistics in their second and third year. Men, after that two-year period, basically say, you know, I've done all of this. I can't do it anymore like this. And they pick up and go on, where women have just begun the process.
Wow.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Elizabeth Brown, our guest, teacher, speaker, professional counselor. She wrote the book Standing Up. She's written several books, but the one we're talking about, Standing Up When Life Falls Down Around You. She wrote a book called, you know what? I saw this a couple years ago. I was traveling. I was in a convenience store, and your book titled Living Successfully with Screwed Up People was on the book stand. I took a picture of the title because it was just like, you know, I know so many people that need this book. Oh, my word. How did that book work out for you?
That book is great because that's how we all feel. I mean, we don't like to use that word for it. We like to put it more politically correct. But the truth is, when we're dealing with someone in our family or our world, our work world or wherever it might be that is driving us crazy, we think they're just plainly screwed up. But you can't get rid of all those people. You have to learn how to be responsible for what you do. And that was born out of talking with lots of people in lots of places who said, but of course you have to move on if your child dies or your marriage breaks up. But if my mother would only change, and I'm thinking, well, what if your mother never changes? Are you still going to be unhappy and blaming her for your bad life? So it's the same in all these things. You have to figure out what you can do to change your thoughts and redirect your actions so that life can return to joy, which is where God wants us.
Yeah. Well, wonderful advice, and you deal with issues of real life and try to help people through your books and writings and speaking to understand how to deal with it from a Christian perspective, but a practical perspective as well. And the two are not mutually exclusive. So where can people get your latest book? And Elizabeth, where can they find you on the internet?
Of course, they can find me on www.elizabethbbrown.com. And you can find the book at BakerPublishingGroup.com, BakerPublishingGroup.com, or any of the bookstores. They're available everywhere.
Okay. Elizabeth Brown, our guest, author of the book Standing Up When Life Falls Down Around You. Thank you, Elizabeth. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoyed being with you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye. All right. We shall return with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Want to get back to politics for just a moment because there's a surprising new poll out on the Trump versus Clinton presidential race.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Rob Michaels, founder of Serve and Protect.
I founded Serve and Protect because it was clear that there were a lot of other issues beyond the spiritual needs that first responders were feeling.
We'll also talk with Jennifer Rothschild, author of Invisible, How You Feel Is Not Who You Are. All that and more next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
After crossing the Jordan River into the Promised Land, God instructed the children of Israel to take stones from the river and make a memorial. When their future children would say, "What do these stones mean?" the parents would recount the Lord's deliverance of Israel from slavery and Israel's arrival in the Promised Land. In each of our lives, there are events that ought to be remembered, events where the Lord moved and delivered us. Whether we use stones, photos, or special celebrations, it matters only that we take time to remember what the Lord has done and pass that testimony on to future generations.
Since 1977, the American Family Association has been informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of America. The Lord has given us many victories over the years that laid the foundation for our work today and into the future. Learn more at AFA.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this commentary next. The Democratic National Convention has a genuine mess on its hands, folks. The good people over at WikiLeaks did a document dump over the weekend, releasing some 20,000 DNC emails, the motherlode of Democrat dirt. The emails reveal that the Party of Tolerance and Diversity has an affinity for anti-Semitism and bigotry, from calling Latino outreach the Taco Bowl engagement to suggestions they question Bernie Sanders' Jewish faith. Bernie was right all along. The DNC primaries really were rigged. The emails also show collusion between the DNC and the mainstream media, from Politico to CBS and NBC. It's some really nasty stuff, folks, and the fallout's just beginning. DNC chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is resigning her post in disgrace. Say what you will about Bernie Sanders, but he got robbed, folks, and I suspect his army of socialists are feeling the burn. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
I didn't know that Todd Stearns was also going to use the word mess to describe the Democrat National Convention. Is it Democrat National Convention or Democratic National?
Democratic National Convention.
But it's the Democrat Party?
The Democratic Party. And then you call them Democrats Republicans.
All right. Well, anyway, the problem, welcome back to Today's Issues, by the way. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. In Philadelphia, what they've done is, this is where the Democrats are having their national convention this week. And they're expecting tens of thousands of protesters. It's a convening. I don't know. Most of these protesters are going to be there because they don't feel like the Democratic Party is far enough to the left.
I think that's accurate.
Am I right?
Yes.
So, the for security purposes, they've erected a fence, a wall, if you will,
4 miles long,
the Clinton Wall. Has been erected around the convention center there in Philadelphia. As you say, 4 miles of fence.
Right.
So think about that. You're going out a mile in each direction, I suppose, around the arena.
No. It's 4 miles. It's 4 miles long this way at the north. A mile. You know, at the north, and then a mile down each, you know, east and western side.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that. Well, that's what I meant.
I'd say, you know, circumference, but it's not a circle. It's a square.
Okay, not a circle. Well, yeah, however you would describe a square circumference.
Yes.
Anyway, the point is you got a mile on each
Each side. In length.
Although if it's round, there are no sides, to your point earlier, Ed, so we can be mathematically correct here in our description.
And as you pointed out in an email that you sent over the weekend, you said, so I guess walls really do work. Because that's been the charge about, you know, Trump's plan or anybody's plan to build a wall on the southern border. Walls won't work.
That's what they tell us.
Well, so there's a fence around the White House. Now it apparently works.
Now Hillary's wall has been built around the Democrat National Convention.
Right.
The center.
Obviously because they expect that to be a barrier.
Yes. And the funny thing of this is to me is the fact that the Democrats, quite frankly, spend about all their time appealing to the very people that they're trying to keep behind this fence.
On the other side of it.
All the disgruntled, upset groups about America not being, you know, Wall Street.
Occupy
crowd.
Yeah.
MoveOn.org.
They'll all
be there protesting. And they're going to be protesting. And even people further to the left, anarchist, you know, basically, they're going to be there. And, I mean, one sign the other day said America was never great. That was a poster of somebody protesting at the Democrat National. These are the kind of folks you're dealing with, and these are the people that the Democrats, quite frankly, the ideological mindset of those inside the arena and the ideological mindset of those protesting the event itself are not too far off, and they're often synonymous, quite frankly, with one another.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be interesting to see the Bernie Sanders voters do not think that Hillary Clinton's choice of vice president is far enough to the left. He's not socialistic enough. He's a senator, Tim Kaine,
right,
from Virginia.
He's former governor, too, there, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Now, he's far left on many issues. That's how I would describe him.
He's a Democrat, so he's
yeah, and they purge themselves of moderates.
Right. You're not going to be a pro-life Democrat.
No. It's interesting, though. He is a Catholic. Did you know that?
Well, lots of Democrats are.
I know.
You know, but Nancy Pelosi and others. Don't believe it.
There are many inconsistencies among us all.
Yes.
Yeah,
that'd be fair to say.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
We But in the case of a Catholic who describes their political views in this way, that I support the church's position on abortion, but I don't believe that I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I believe a woman should have a right to choose abortion. Okay. This is what the Senator Tim Kaine and this is what some other Catholics say.
Right.
Okay, the official Catholic, the church teaching is clear on abortion. In fact, the Catholics led the way in the pro-life movement.
Right.
After Roe versus Wade, the Catholic Church has always taught that abortion is immoral.
It's a mortal sin, which...
Oh, it's more than immoral, it's a mortal sin.
Yeah, mortal sin means one capable of damning the soul. You have mortal
That's
sins...
That's a teaching
and,
within the Catholic
right,
Church.
Mortal sins and venial sins, and I wasn't raised Catholic, went to an all-boys Catholic high school, so some of this, you know, I still remember, but, you know, a mortal sin is a very dangerous sin, and to have an abortion is considered a mortal sin. Just like murdering, just like killing, just shooting your neighbor. A mortal sin.
Okay. That's gravely serious.
It's a gravely serious sin. It's capable of leading to the damnation of a soul.
Okay. So if you're a practicing Catholic, and which means you're voluntarily submitting yourself to the teaching of the church,
right.
True?
Yes.
All right. Then how in the world can you reconcile saying I subscribe to the teaching of my church that abortion is murder, it's a murder of an innocent human being, therefore a mortal sin, and yet I'm good with other people doing that, and I'll support their right to do so. Well, you tell me how that can possibly be.
Well, I'll tell you how I believe it.
Okay, go ahead.
It's the same as evangelicals who say, yes, I believe the Bible is God's word, but no, I don't believe what the Bible says about homosexuality or I reject that, or I think. So in other words, human beings have the capacity to rationalize anything and put themselves in charge so that they stand in judgment of
that
church teaching or the Bible.
That is true.
And say, I don't believe in a God who can send someone to hell. You hear that a lot.
But with the Catholic Church, it's much stricter. How stricter may not be the. It's much more structured and authoritarian than the average Protestant church, in the sense that the church teaching is from God.
It's laid out in like the Catechism, which would be similar to, you know, the Anglican Church has its. Has its kind of catechism, you know, the Westminster Confession for Presbyterians. So, the Catholic Church in its magisterium, which is its body of teaching, everything is laid out specifically. In other words, there's no real wriggle room. I'm having a hard time saying that.
Wiggle.
Wiggle, okay.
For once, I pronounced a word that you couldn't. count that for me right
yes.
there. But anyway, the point is, to me, I don't see how a politician escapes excommunication from the Catholic Church. Excommunication means kicked out of the church when you say that you are not going to oppose abortion. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And to say. Think about, let's phrase it in this way. What if I told you I'm personally opposed to murder, but I don't want to impose my views on other people who might not think it's murder? Now, how does that sound? You would be able to, you're repulsed by that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you go, and you're going, that's illogical reasoning. So it's the same thing. If the Catholic Church teaches that abortion is a mortal sin, I don't see how. And you're a politician that you can use your position to oppose or advance abortion, and you're a Catholic and you don't oppose it at every turn.
Not only do you not oppose it, you vote for it.
So, which is what he has done.
Yeah,
and Nancy Pelosi and other Catholics.
They vote for laws that make abortion easier. So it even goes beyond that, illogical.
So is my point about the Catholic Church being more authoritarian, I don't think that other churches kick their members out for having views like that. Maybe they do. I don't know. But in the Catholic Church, if you're going to promote something that's a mortal sin, and you're not kicked out of the church, also known as excommunication, then I would have to say, just looking at that on its face, I would have to say the Catholic Church in America is not serious about that. How else do I read that?
Yeah, and now some bishops, I can't remember names, but some bishops over the last, you know,
the Catholic,
10 years.
Let me interrupt you just 1 second to say this. The Catholic Church either needs to enforce their teaching on that, or it sort of makes a, it doesn't seem like it's serious to me if they're not going to enforce. There, you see what you understand where I'm going.
I
with
do,
this?
And okay. so, and some
I can't
bishops,
articulate it well, but anyway, go ahead.
Some bishops have tried to enforce, for example, not giving communion to someone who's been disfellowshipped. I think excommunication is probably rare, but they've tried not to give communion to politicians who are in favor of abortion. But a lot of times they're kind of forced to back down. Because that's a very in the Catholic Church. Here I am talking about I have very surfacey knowledge. So some people who are Catholics
surfacey
out there listening,
is a good word, though.
Yeah, their heads may be blowing off. But you know, my understanding is a lot of times it's the bishops in a local area who have the power to do what you're talking about, to excommunicate somebody or to deny communion. And it's very, very rare that it happens, because the majority of Catholics in America disagree with the church on this particular issue.
Well, I just, a Catholic pro-choice candidate, that makes no sense to me at all. And I don't see how they get away with it without punishment from the church, if the church is going to say abortion is a mortal sin. And I know, bro, there are a lot of Catholics who listen to us right now who are going, amen.
Right.
I agree with what you're saying. I don't either, as a Catholic, see how they get away with it. But it's been politicized, even within the Catholic Church, especially in certain parts of the country. I just never understood, all the way back to the Kennedys, how you get away as a Catholic with being pro-abortion,
yeah,
or pro-choice.
Yeah, because Ted Kennedy, senator for, decades and decades and decades. Yeah. And, you know, pretty strong, you know, archdiocese there.
Now, Tim Kaine, this all started by our conversation. By the way, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. So this all began by our conversation about the Democrats. Hillary Clinton selected Tim Kaine, the senator from Virginia, as a running mate, former governor there. I'm sure she's hoping that he helps her win Virginia, which is going to be key to the presidential election. I'm going to get to that poll here in just a minute that I said I was going to 20 minutes ago. But he has evidently somewhere in his past voted for restricting abortion at some level. I'm talking about the Kaine. And so the pro-abortion absolutists, which make up the vast majority of the Democrat Party, if you don't stand up and cheer for abortion, then you're not committed to the cause.
Right.
To the NARAL groups, the National Abortion Rights League, and these folks. I mean, this is how rabid the Democrat Party has become now about abortion. So they're criticizing him because he at some point in his career voted to restrict abortion on some level. I'm saying, so he's not far left enough.
Right. Well, the Democratic Party is so far left on abortion, they actually defended Planned Parenthood when those videos were released.
Right.
Remember,
yeah.
You know, that appeared to make clear that Planned Parenthood was selling baby body parts.
Well, they were.
Yeah,
they were. The videos showed that they were.
So, you know, well, of course, they made arguments saying it was you know, fabricated and edited and whatever.
Yeah,
but
whatever.
They seem to defend that. I don't know how much more heinous you can get than profiteering.
No, the Democrats, today's modern day Democrat Party, there is no allowance for a divergent view on the life issue. You can't, pro-life Democrat doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
The Democrat Party purged themselves of any pro-lifers. You're not welcome. You're not accepted. You can't even say, I disagree within the party, or you're just not going to be allowed. Now, Republicans have both pro-choice and pro-life.
Right.
You'll find both. But Democrats,
their platform, though, it remains
pro-life. Pro-life. But I'm talking about individuals.
Yes.
You know, or candidates.
And purged them like the Democratic Party has purged pro-life Democrats.
Right. So there used to be Yellow Dog Democrats. There used to be Dixiecrats. There used to be moderate.
Blue Dog.
There used to be moderate, you know, middle of the road, the Blue Dogs. They were basically conservative on some issues, Democrats. But they were Roosevelt, FDR Democrats.
Right.
You know, they were maybe more conservative on social issues, but more liberal on economic issues, for example. But those people don't exist anymore. I'm thinking maybe the senator from West Virginia, what gentleman's name starts with an M. But
yeah,
there's one, maybe you'll find two or three out there, but they just, you know, the Democrats have purged themselves of the conservative Democrat. I don't think Bill Clinton could. There is no way to me, Bill Clinton could be the Democrat nominee for president today.
You know, I think you're right. I think he would be considered too middle of the road, too willing to compromise on some of these issues. Manchin?
Yeah, Manchin, the West Virginia senator. Yeah. Now, I think if Bill Clinton were running today for the Democrat nomination. Now, keep in mind, I'm talking about the Bill Clinton of the 90s.
Right, that ran in 1992.
If you took a time machine and moved him to today and said, you run for president on the Democrat ticket, there's no way he wins the nomination because the party itself is so far, far, far left of where Clinton was as governor of Arkansas.
Right.
Remember, he's the one who started the moderate Democrats, that group he started to oppose the leftward trends of the Democrat Party. Bill Clinton did. Right. I'm no fan of Bill Clinton. I'm just saying he was by today's standards, he would be considered a conservative Democrat in many respects. That's how far left the Democrat Party has gone nationally.
Well, you look at the success of Bernie Sanders.
That's what I'm saying.
Socialist.
Look at that.
You would never find a Democrat
that's
in the 1990s.
That's 40% of the
party. Right. 1990s, you'd never have a Democrat running saying, look, I'm a socialist. You know, I admit it. You just wouldn't have that in the 1990s.
No, he gave Hillary Clinton all she wanted in the primary season.
Yes.
And call him a communist. What does he call Democrat socialist?
Democratic socialist. You know, the fact of the matter is, if Hillary Clinton had not had those 700 and something, I think maybe 792, these superdelegates, which are party officials that basically pledge their loyalty to one candidate or another, if she didn't have those, this convention would be a toss-up. If you just went by the primaries and the caucuses and who won what, it would be a toss, not quite, but it'd be close to being a toss-up between Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so finally we get to this poll I wanted to talk about for just a minute, and that is, I'm getting this from Business Insider. This is on the internet today. It's on the internet today. It's got to be true. Huh? Do you question the internet?
No, I don't. Not anymore.
I don't question it. The internet's true. Okay, this is on a website called businessinsider.com. Politics, under the headline politics, it says, if the election were held Monday, that is today, Donald Trump would likely win. That's what renowned statistician Nate Silver projected on Monday for his data journalism outlet 538. He says, this fellow who's Nate, I've heard of him. Have you ever heard of
Nate Silver? Yeah, he's supposed to be one of the most accurate in predicting.
Okay. He says that if the ballots were cast today, that he gives Republican nominee Donald Trump a 57.5% chance of winning the presidency. Now, I've never seen that before with this race. That's astounding. And then he says presumptive Democrat nominee Hillary Clinton had a 42.5% chance of securing the nation's highest office if voters were to take the polls Monday. Now, here is the stunning thing that he cites. Again, this is the end of July. Got a few months left here.
Just had the RNC,
so Trump got a bump off that. But still, Silver's model, this is the famed statistician, had Trump winning the swing states of Florida, Pennsylvania. Republicans haven't won Pennsylvania since 1988.
Right.
I mean, Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, North Carolina. How North Carolina ever became a swing state is beyond me, but it should be a solidly Republican state. And they are on a state level.
Yeah.
But presidential elections, they vote the other way sometimes. Iowa, Nevada, and New Hampshire. He would win, Trump that is, according to this fellow, who's an expert at predicting, if the election were held today, Trump would win 285 electoral votes. Yeah, what do you need, 270?
270.
So I mean, my question to Ed Vitagliano is, do you think this is because Trump is so good or Hillary Clinton is so bad?
Yes. So, listen, now, I think Trump is
not liked by a lot of people either, though.
I think there's a number of factors at work here. I think Hillary Clinton has so much baggage, and it keeps getting worse. More and more keeps getting revealed, like this WikiLeaks thing. Right. This is all gonna attach itself to Hillary Clinton. The fact that she basically, for political reasons, appeared to have gotten away with not being indicted by the Justice Department. The FBI didn't even recommend it. I think that
after Bill
well.
Clinton meets for half an hour with a personal meeting with the Attorney General,
right,
on a tarmac. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Go ahead.
I also think if you add in there is some goodwill towards Trump because he's anti-PC. I think a lot of Americans are fed up with that. Plus, I think the economy is a big factor, and now public safety and national security are added into the mix. And I don't think
those are pro-Trump issues.
I think because he has from the beginning said things like we've got to build a wall because of drug dealers and the possibility of
protecting our southern border.
And very early on, he said, whether he carries it out or not, he looked tough on Islamic fundamentalism.
Well, he mentioned it three times in his speech the other day, which is to the PC point.
Right.
He doesn't mind saying this is Islamic terrorism.
But he very early, remember he said, we're not allowing Muslims into the country. Now, he's backpedaled from that. But people remember it. People remember that Trump is the one who has been saying the words radical Islam and has said, I'm going to do something about it.
Some things Trump says things that are from the gut.
Yes.
That he hadn't thought out very well. That can work for you or against you.
And he says it's because I'm not a politician.
Right. And I believe
that resonates
on that.
With people right
and
now.
And so when you say no more Muslims in America immigrating, what he's saying is, hey, it's Muslims that are killing people all over the world. This got to stop. And if it means we stop them from coming in here, I'm ready to do that.
And he said, we're going to do it until we figure out what's going on.
Right, right. Now, when he says that, a lot of Americans go, that makes sense to me.
Right.
I don't want our country to be bombed.
On the other hand, when Hillary Clinton responds to some of these killings saying,
we need
love and understanding. That's what's going to turn these Muslims around. Or
right.
One of the Democratic bigwigs saying, they just need jobs. They're showing a profound misunderstanding of what we're facing.
You're giving us reasons why you think Trump has risen in the polls.
Yes. I think it's a combination of all those things.
All those things. But I think Hillary Clinton would be winning were she not viewed by the majority of Americans as untrustworthy, corrupt. What does Trump call her?
Crooked Hillary.
You got it. Trump's a different.
This is blowing. You know, this is the kind of year in politics where you go, well, my degree in political science is just worthless. Because who predicted this? All the experts, all the politicians running against
him.
Well,
social media has changed the world, too. I mean,
yes.
I read about twice a day I get on and read Twitter. Now, I don't tweet, but my son signed me up to about 10 people's tweets.
Yeah.
And one of them
read them.
So I can read them. And one of them was Donald Trump's. He tweets about 10 times or 20.
You say he's a machine. He's a tweeting machine.
I would say 10 times would be minimal, but I think more like 20 times a day Donald Trump tweets. And so he's caught on to this crooked Hillary thing, and it stuck. So every time he refers to her in those tweets, it's crooked Hillary, and it's just... And she doesn't help herself because she's involved in all these scandals.
Right.
So it sort of fits the narrative.
Yes.
That most people think about her. And when he...
Puzzle pieces being
anyway,
put together, yeah.
Crazy, crazy political season. Unlike anything we've ever seen before. Ed and I'll be back after the news.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.